very much for the opportunity to be here. And I'm really going to talk about international impacts. Actually, there's a lot of commonality with what we've just heard. Who's heard of tradecraft? Yay, loads of people. Fantastic. Let me just... Right. There are two sides to tradecraft, for those of you that don't know. One is a social business, where the purpose is to benefit workers and farmers and communities in developing countries. And so it runs as a social business. It's Tradecraft PLC, and you may well see fair trade products brought into this country by Tradecraft. And then the other part is an international development charity, which is all about influencing the largest part of trade, mainstream commercial trade, so that it has a better impact on poverty. Because if we see trade as the sustainable route out of poverty, which we do as Tradecraft, then we must influence mainstream trade, because in some cases, trade is actually making people poorer. And you might ask yourself that question after the presentation we've just had. And so really, what is it that means that trade is being done in a way that shares the benefits well with people, and what are the circumstances where, in fact, it's undermining people's ability to live good lives? So very quickly, fair trade intentionally sets out to benefit workers. I've put in a picture of a tea producer, blueberries, and in this case, this organisation in India, we're not just buying coffee from them, but we are also doing the next level, which is the added value stage, is happening in India. And we're also trying to bring new products to the UK market so that we can benefit more people. So those are rubber gloves. And the key elements in terms of how fair trade was designed is about creating opportunities. Tradecraft is also about understanding business. And so the practical side of that is thinking about fair trading practices. We know that cash flow is a really major issue. So often we will be doing advanced payments. None of this paying people 120 days later, which is what some of the retailers are doing. And prices. How are we setting prices? Are we setting prices in a way that could even pay a living wage? So that's why there's a focus on those issues. Ensuring that children are not exploited, no discrimination, and aiming for safe working conditions. Now let's look at sort of mainstream trade overseas. There are many cases where it is done well. It provides people with foreign exchange. It gives them skill development. So you've got some parts of the food supply chain where a narrow part is what's essentially upskilling. But there's an enormous part which is labour intensive, and that we've got some major problems. So there, when people talk about flexible, that actually means an impact on a human being. That means long overtime at short notice. Let's just be honest about it. And so children are waiting for their mothers to get home because their mother is still at the pack house or at a manufacturing site. That's not acceptable. People are evicted as a result of land grabs. That's clearly happening in palm oil and coffee in some places. And then we've obviously got environmental degradation, as chemicals that are way too strong are used to produce food, particularly in aquaculture. So why is this happening? Our analysis, and building on your diagram of a supply chain, essentially, retailers and brands, those very large companies, are pushing pressures down the supply chain. And this is research that came from Oxfam in 2005, but it still stands today. And I would argue, in terms of shaping policies and markets, we really ought to be asking the question, why have we not changed this situation? Retailers and brands push for low prices, flexible production, and higher quality, good working conditions in the supply chain. They are effectively duplicitous in what they are asking for. As a result, anyone who is employing people at what I would call a labour-intensive stage of production is going to look for a flexible, cheap workforce. It's quite predictable. So there are women and migrants hired, short-term contracts, and you don't pay people benefits. You undermine them for organising. It's purposeful, and this is what's happening overseas. So it's a logical outcome. Now, why is this happening? And we would say this is happening for sort of two very macro issues. One is, you need to look at who's got the power. Essentially, this data is out of date, and if anyone, a lovely academic, would do me a new diagram, I'd be really happy. But we've got 3 million farmers selling to 160 million consumers in Europe, and at that point in time, they had to get through 110 individuals in retailers, just 110 individuals. And this is why, this is what essentially explains why businesses are not negotiating with each other on an equal basis, and why suppliers are not able to say to their very large buyers, I'm walking away from this deal. It is not in my interests, because they have got less and less buyers to sell to. So in any supply chain, you have to do essentially what I would call a bottleneck diagram to understand who's got the power in that supply chain. They will be making the money, and they will be dictating the terms to the rest of the supply chain. So that's one very large structural problem. And this is bananas, and you can do it. This is a, you can directly take it to who's getting the money. So basically, we've got very concentrated transnational banana companies, and the tricky bit there is you have banana ripening boats. They're very capital intensive to buy. They're expensive. So that's very concentrated. Retailing is concentrated, and the rest is labour intensive, and then it's reflected in who makes what money. This is the other large sort of structural problem, which is we are sourcing more and more from places that are cheap. Now, one of the reasons they are cheap is actually they don't have access to justice systems. So if you are, as an individual, have your rights violated, you cannot get access to justice in that country. And therefore, people who are doing bad things, let's put it simply, can continue to do those things. So this is a large issue that we are concerned about. So these are my two areas for solutions that I hope your commission report might want to look into a bit more. One is around the power issue. We need to stop abusive purchasing practices and address concentrations in supply chains. That's one grouping. And then the other group is, we can't wait for many, many developing countries' justice systems to evolve. That's 20, 30 years plus time, with more deaths, more people evicted, subject to bad working conditions. We in the UK should be providing a parallel route to justice for vulnerable people who are harmed by British companies, and British companies that are benefiting from that exploitation. So those are the two areas I'd like to just look at a bit more. We have now a groceries code adjudicator. The groceries code adjudicator, have you, you've heard of her?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now the limitations are, she is only able to look at the relationship between retailers and direct suppliers. She could interpret that quite flexibly, because in some cases the retailer owns the next level down. So Asda owns a company called IPL, and therefore the relationship between IPL and farms directly could, if she chose to, fall within her remit. But that's probably the only one that goes that next level down. We need to see an improvement of practices. She's only just got her fine level, but but she can't apply her maximum fine level because she doesn't get it until April. Meanwhile, she started an investigation on Tesco's, which is very positive, but we know that Tesco's has made 250 million that it's able to keep in its pocket as a result of basically delaying and underpaying payments to suppliers. So actually, her ability to fine is pretty important, and she doesn't have that power for her very first investigation. That's a mistake. But hopefully, the next set of investigations, she will have that as an option. Investigations should lead to improved practices, and we have to recognise that the retailers are essentially the primary cause of many problems in food supply chains. They've got that power. But we do need to recognise that those problems get passed down the supply chain, and I feel that there is a need that the Grocery Code Adjudicator's powers should be extended to benefit the whole of the supply chain. Now, the process for influencing that is that the Grocery Code Adjudicator's office and role will be reviewed after March 2016, and I would strongly argue at that point in time that that is the time to say her role needs to be extended. And at that point in time, there should be an argument to BIS, DEFRA and DFID, which is the international part of government, to do a consultation about what specifically she should be enforcing on. But the design of her powers and investigation is probably okay, but there may be some commercial practices that we need to understand better that she needs to include in her scope. The next point to talk about is Europe. In theory, we have one market, and Europe has understood that there is a problem of abusive trading practices, and they have got a communication out that has asked every single member state to look at whether or not food companies experience abusive trading practices. So every member state has been asked to do that. And if abusive practices are experienced by a food company, and because of the climate of fear, they're not able to go to a court or they feel uncomfortable going to a court, then each member state needs to recognise that and feed that back to Europe. They have also asked for more coordination, because essentially the very, very large retailers are competing at a global basis. And so the UK is a relatively small market, and we need coordinated European enforcement. Tesco's, this is Tesco's slide about how it is coordinating its purchasing across UK, Northern Ireland and Eastern Europe. One person is buying for all of those products that are sold in all of those different countries. So as much as possible, they are trying to get economies of scale in how they buy. So instead of having the quite strong power, because they've got, you know, approximately, it used to be 40% market share in the UK, they've now got even more buying power because they're buying so much more relative to their suppliers. So we need to be thinking about coordinated European enforcement.
Hi there, sorry I'm late.
Competition bodies have felt uncomfortable looking at the issue of buyer power. Most competition bodies feel comfortable looking at the issue of supplier power, but we need to be looking at the issue of buyer power. And then the last area to talk about is this need for providing a route to justice. Each one of these pictures I've put with its product, so these are evictions associated with coffee, shrimps, and as we know, we've got bonded, trafficked labour in the shrimps and the Thai food sector coming into this country, and people virtually destitute in tea plantations in Assam. It's predictable, we know it's happening, it carries on. So Tradecraft at the moment has just started a campaign, and we are keen to approach all possible parliamentary candidates to ask them what they would do if they were to come into Parliament to to address this gap in justice. And we've got 3 points. At this moment in time, it seems that it may not even be possible to take a criminal prosecution against a British company for abuses that they have committed abroad. So that's one area. It would make a really big difference if we could actually look at that and address that. The next one is we've got financial legal barriers to people bringing cases from overseas communities into the UK. And the last is to explore an out-of-court system. But anything you do in this area must have sanctions that are equivalent and will deter people from doing what are ultimately very profitable activities. The process to be influencing is something called the UK National Action Plan on Business and Human Rights, which is a joint Foreign Office and BIS document. And that is due to be reviewed this year. So, in terms of what people can do, buy fair trade, like us on Facebook, Twitter, and then I brought some campaign briefings and postcards that go to parliamentary leaders, and I hope you might fancy doing it. Thank you very much.